from protocol to pilot, taking baby steps in policy development for a citywide non-occupational post-exposure prophylaxis, or NPEP, HIV prevention strategy. Zupinda is a master certified health education specialist and has worked in the HIV field for over 10 years. She is a training specialist for the Pennsylvania Mid-Atlantic AIDS Education and Training Center at the Health Federation of Philadelphia. She received her MPH from UMDNJ School of Public Health, and presently she is a DRPH candidate at Drexel University School of Public Health, specializing in community health and prevention, and anticipates graduating next year.
Thank you and good afternoon. So I will be speaking with you about a work group's process to develop a protocol and a pilot for the implementation for an MPEP program. I have no relationships to disclose. So a little bit about what's happening in Philadelphia regarding HIV. At year-end 2010, over 19,000 people living with HIV and AIDS in Philadelphia. Most of these individuals are men and minorities, primarily African-American, and the primary modes of transmission are MSM and heterosexual, followed by injection drug use, and then a combination of MSM and injection drug use. Philadelphia accounts for 60% of the HIV-AIDS epidemic in Pennsylvania, and the HIV incidence for Philadelphia is 5 times that of the national incidence rate. Regardless of whether the mode of transmission is heterosexual sex, men who have sex with men, or injection drug use, African Americans represent the majority of all cases in all categories in Philadelphia. Currently, 2% of African American and 1.8% of Latinos in Philadelphia are infected with HIV, which meets the definition of a generalized HIV epidemic in Philadelphia. As you can imagine, minorities in the United States face a number of challenges that contribute to the higher rates of HIV infection and the socioeconomic issues associated with poverty, including limited access to health care, housing, and HIV prevention education, directly and indirectly increase the risk for HIV infection and affect the health of people living with HIV. This is just a graphical representation of what I just discussed. And as you can look at the years from 2006 to 2010, and looking at HIV cases by race, ethnicity, and data diagnosis, that African Americans are disproportionately infected with HIV. This graph, I wanted to just point out on the pie chart that almost 50% of the incident rate are by MSM. And in this this slide, basically showing that it was estimated that 1.6% of MSM in Philadelphia became infected with HIV in 2009, and that between the years of 2006 and 2009, there was almost a 90% estimated increase in HIV incidence in MSM. And this is driven by new infections in young African-American MSM, those youth from ages 13 to 24. Meanwhile, there was a 28% increase in the number of MSM newly diagnosed with HIV during the same time frame, and this suggests that an increasing number of MSM are unaware they are infected. In 2005, the CDC released guidelines on antiretroviral post-exposure prophylaxis for non-occupational exposure. And in MPEP usage, when going through the process, it involves HIV risk assessment, HIV STD testing and treatment, prevention and risk reduction counseling, providing a prescription, access to care, and initiation of PEP. But when deciding if someone is a candidate for MPEP, you know, clinicians have to go to this algorithm, and basically there needs to be a significant exposure of risk. So is there blood or bodily fluid exposure? Has there been a sexual assault? Has there been a barrier contraception mishap, like a condom break? Also assessing the risk of transmission. Unprotected anal receptive sex is a higher risk for infection, and then the risk decreases with unprotected anal insertive sex, unprotected vaginal receptive sex, and then unprotected vaginal insertive sex. And then you also have to look at special circumstances that may increase the risk of HIV transmission following the exposure, whether it's consensual or rape, is the partner or assailant HIV positive? Is there a presence of STD in either the partner or the assailant? Also, if there was significant genital trauma, if there were multiple partners or assailants, also if there were multiple penetrations by partners and assailants. So all of these things have to be assessed to determine if this person is a great candidate for MPEP. Ideally, MPEP is most effective within 2 hours, but it is still effective up to 72 hours. So that time frame is very crucial when being able to provide MPEP to someone who needs it. So the Philadelphia Department of Public Health requested the AIDS Education Training Center to facilitate a working group of multiple stakeholders shortly after the CDC released the guidelines to review a local jurisdiction response. As you can imagine, it was almost similar to with emergency contraception in terms of, you know, being controversial. If we, you know, tell people about MPEP, will there be more, you know, risky sexual behavior? So there was, you know, certain people that were there in the beginning, but there was also some pushback, from other individuals. The group stopped meeting, but then the group reconvened in 2009, partly in response to alarming reports of women not being offered MPEP after rape. These are organizations that are involved: AIDS Education Training Center, the Philadelphia Department of Public Health, Family Planning Council, two of our children's hospitals, St. Chris and Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, Drexel University College of Medicine, their emergency department, Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, and Mazzoni, which is an LGBT AIDS services organization. The work group would meet on a monthly, sometimes quarterly basis as needed. One of the goals was to assess the availability of MPEP and develop local guidelines to improve accessibility. So we did an assessment of some of our HIV providers in the city. That assessment included questions on HIV testing, provision of occupational and non-occupational post-exposure prophylaxis, requests, the demographics of those requests, and also if they provided starter packs for individuals requesting MPEP. And what we found were that there was limited knowledge of MPEP. Not many of the ASOs had MPEP protocols. If they did, they may not have had a comprehensive follow-up procedure. And as you can imagine, you know, money was an issue, funding, and also staff being able to provide MPEP. In terms of individuals that requested it, they were primarily from racial ethnic minority populations, also MSM. There was questions regarding training needs. We wanted to see if people wanted, if they needed to increase their knowledge about MPEP. So they indicated not only training in how to provide MPEP and all that it entails, but also HIV rapid testing. A baseline test has to be done to be determine if the individual is already positive or not before you can give that person MPEP. And most of the sites in Philadelphia are doing rapid testing, but there are some sites that are still doing comprehensive testing. And in terms of us developing a citywide protocol, we also wanted to look to see what other cities were doing. So the health department reached out to our constituents, well, our colleagues in right here in San Francisco, LA County, and New York City. We wanted to see if there was something in their protocols that we could use in Philadelphia. So the protocol that we have is based on the CDC guidelines, but it also includes clinical and risk assessments for patients who may have been exposed to HIV, rapid HIV testing guidelines, and appropriate antiretroviral regimens. Basically, the work group wanted the protocol to get approved by the health commissioner, who has joined us today, and to become a standard of care. So things that we have done thus far, developing the citywide protocol. Also, we wanted to look at the infrastructure of the ASOs, if they were able to provide MPEP, increase the awareness and accessibility and provision. We wanted to, of course, do this with the ASOs, but also non-HIV providers. Many times, someone may come in and describe what has happened to them or go to an emergency room, and if they're not knowledgeable about these signs, they may turn the person away. Or I've heard a case where someone came in and a condom broke and they said, well, you know, the drugs are more, you know, harmful than the risk of being infected, which is crazy. That's another presentation. But as you can imagine, we want them to be sent to the appropriate place so that the awareness has to be out there. And then also incorporating MPEP in existing HIV prevention efforts, because it's not a standalone HIV prevention strategy. So some of the assets in terms of policy development, the work group is cohesive. We meet regularly. As I mentioned before, the protocol has been developed. We have buy-in from the health commissioner's office, which is key. Anytime you want policy to take place, you need to have leadership that are going to make things happen. So we're very lucky that we have the health department supporting us doing this. We have the involvement of MPET follow-up providers, and what that means is I mentioned earlier that some MPET programs will have, if someone goes to an ER, they may get a starter pack, and a starter pack may be anywhere from 3 to 7 pills. Well, the full course is 28 days, so they may need to go somewhere else to get the rest of the course. So the reason why I have potential in bold is because as we started going through this process, it kind of changed where there are providers that are on board, but there's just concern, is there going to be high patient demand? Do they have the resources to be able to be that follow-up provider? So it's kind of a sensitive matter when you start looking at funding and resources that are available. We did a biomedical HIV prevention conference last year, basically letting the City of Philadelphia know that we are currently working on this. As you can imagine, there's a lot of buzz on MPEP, and I think a lot of times people don't realize all that goes into when you're trying to get a policy done, and it doesn't happen overnight. But we wanted to let them know that we are indeed doing something, but we're trying to make sure that we're doing things the right way, and things are as comprehensive as they need to be. Also with the AIDS Education Training Center, we had training programs in terms of MPEP as well as HIV routine testing. So some challenges that we have just in terms of system limitations, just looking at the cost benefit of MPEP, also the capacity of providers that I mentioned before. Financial barriers are key. And in terms of folks that come in for MPEP, if they have health insurance, there has been no issue of them getting a prescription covering, having insurance covering that prescription and being on MPEP. But what we're finding are issues with those that are non-insured. And also, is there enough staff to coordinate those things? Another thing we wanted to look at was just the logistics. So some of the challenges were, okay, you know, are we going to use existing staff? Do we have the resources to hire new people to do this? And what happens if there's a weekend exposure with the 72 hours? So lessons learned were that collaborative efforts are key. We wanted to do a pilot program. And what we found was that the things that we wanted to do in terms of just, you know, having a protocol, having a pilot program, and then having an overall program was not as easy as it seemed. And our objectives were to have an AIDS service organization serve as the site and kind of do logistically, like, okay, people are coming in for MPEP, have the medicines there, the staff there, and then have someone else, another site, be a follow-up site. And it sounded great, but as we started to look at that, the funding that the health department had from the CDC could not be used to buy the medications, which is our biggest barrier. So we all had the same goals in mind, but whether or not we had the capacity to transfer those ideals to action was another story. So in terms of looking at other things that the health department was allowed to do, one of the things that our pilot ended up shaping up to be was more of disseminating the information and working with those non-HIV providers and getting the information out. Other things that were a lesson learned was also looking at other priorities that may overshadow what you want to do with the approval of PrEP. That is, you know, just as important, if not more important, than MPEP. And so with, you know, you have these, national guidance and approval of this, it is, we have these fears that it's going to overshadow MPEP. And so we're still having an MPEP fight, and we just want to try to, have the argument that, you know, it's all MPEP and PrEP are all part of the HIV prevention toolbox. So we're trying to sort that out to see which direction this goes into. But it's basically... the recommendations are basically that, trying to really look at exactly everything that you have, basically your existing funding sources and the parameters if you are going to do a pilot. Writing it down, it sounds great, but when you're really looking at what your limitations are in terms of what you can spend money on, what you have the capacity to do, it may change the outlook of what you are doing. So The last thing I want to just say in terms of the AIDS Education and Training Center role, one of the things that we do are keeping clinicians abreast of updated information related to HIV. So in terms of disseminating the clinical guidelines, we are already on board for that. And one of the things that we discussed during one of our last meetings was, you know, do we give this information out to individuals without knowing how we're going to cover it? And even though it may not be a seamless process, we felt that it was a disservice if we don't let them know that it exists. So it's kind of a tough situation, but we are hoping that we can, you know, reduce the number of HIV infections that are happening in the city by using MPEP, and we're just continuing to work on that process. And these are members of my work group, so I want to thank them and also thank Commissioner Dr. Schwartz for all your support through this process. Thank you.